Now, Boyzone. Yes, Boyzone, the very iconic boy band from Dublin that went on to sell millions and millions of records, are back in the news cycle once again because anticipation is growing for the release of their new documentary series this Sunday. It's called No Matter What. Actually, let's just have a little listen to the clip. Have a listen to this. No matter
what, I just wanted out. Get away from that toxic environment.
There are things that happened that were cruel. Stand on a stage in front of 100,000 people, it was a lonely time.
Joining me now to give us an idea of what to expect is arts journalist and film critic Chris Wazer. Chris, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Laura, thanks a million for having me.
Chris, you had the opportunity to see this before it's released. Can you give us a little idea of how it tells Boyzone's story?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's kind of a pop documentary with a difference in that it allows the members of the group. We see all of these documentaries, they have so many talking heads, they'll have a narration, and there'll be sort of a clip show. But this brings together the four surviving members of Boyzone. So that's Ronan Keating, who is also producing here, and that's quite an important element. Keith Duffy, Shane Lynch, and also Mikey Graham, prefers to go by Michael now. And they tell this story, and they tell it very well, but they tell it separately. So okay. We have these individual interviews that have been pieced together to tell the history of Boyzone. Now, there will be a segment where, you know, and this is not really spoiling anything because we have seen them on the red carpet this week promoting the film, where three of the members will come together to kind of, you know, close that story. Then on the outside, I suppose you have various members who are quite crucial to, you know, Boyzone's success. Mm-hmm. Obviously, their former manager, Louis Walsh. We have some showbiz journalists, Paul Martin and Rav Singh. Bill Hughes, a video director. But they're all helping to tell this story, which, as we know at this point, wasn't just, you know, a tale of five lads from Dublin kind of hitting the big time, becoming some of the biggest pop stars in the world in the 90s, but also a tale that was laced with sadness and unfortunately tragedy.
What are some of the key elements that the series focus on? I know you kind of touched on a couple of them there, Chris.
Yeah, so it's obviously, it brings us back to the beginning, and it tells us, you know, about how everybody knows that late show clip, or, you know, when Boyzone was a six piece, they hadn't, Michael Graham still wasn't even a part of them at this stage. They hadn't even a song rehearsed, a dance rehearsed, but Louis Walsh booked them on the late show and just told them to just, you know, shake their backsides, basically.
Yeah.
We all know that, but it brings us back through extraordinary footage to the auditions in North Dublin, you know, to that first sighting of Ronan Keating, you know, that glimpse when Walsh and everyone there thought, okay, well, here's our front man, basically. Mm-hmm. Stories of, you know, when Louis Walsh had to borrow 10 grand to fly some of the lads up to the UK to record their first single. And then it kind of carries us through how, you know, they cracked the UK, how they went on to sell 25 million records, and also how it came to a point when these five guys who, and I should say this, you know, you sometimes hear of pop bands like this talking about how when they spend this much time together, they become more than bandmates, they're brothers. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I kind of just brush that off. I think, well, of course they're going to say that. With Boyzone, despite the fact that they've been through so much, you know, and that they've had so many fallings out, because I was going to mention the fact that Ronan Keating going solo mm-hmm. was sort of the reason why they took a break, you do still believe, looking at the footage and then looking at them being interviewed now, these guys would do anything for each other.
Yeah. Like, you're mentioning, obviously, like, you know, selling millions of albums and, like, the shininess of the first audition process and getting them over to record their first album. But, like, can this be a difficult, like, watch at times? I've heard it can.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like such a great lifestyle, but, you know, it's also, it's a costly one. And the guys talk about how exhausted they were, about, you know, how days off at the top of the charts do not exist, basically. And, you know, there were times when these guys were so burnt out. I don't know how they made it through the day. And they also talk about, you know, they bring us into I found it quite revealing that Louis Walsh talks about the fact that he never actually traveled with the band when they went international, and that they had their own tour managers. And that sort of, you know, that sort of happens with a lot of groups, but I was just surprised to hear that he never traveled with them at all. And they do talk about the fact that, you know, there's obviously two big stories here, which are getting an awful lot of attention. One is the fact that the guys do talk about the fact that in 1999, the summer of 1999, the Sun newspaper contacted Stephen Gately, and they told him that they were going to run the story, which would out him as a gay man. And they basically took away his choice to talk to his own family about that, to kind of, you know, come out himself. you know, he was put in a corner and it was devastating for him. And the guys are shown, like, you know, Ronan Keating, Michael Graham, Shane and Keith, they're shown this newspaper story for the first time and they're devastated by it. And Louis is or not for the first time, but they're for the first time in years.
Yeah.
And Louis is also shown the paper and he has a very different reaction. Louis Walsh doesn't always come out very well from this documentary, it must be said. We also hear, I mean, this was a complete surprise to me. Of course, we do also touch on Stephen Gately's death, but in terms of Michael Graham's life, he speaks very openly and honestly about the fact that he was offered a lead singer position at the very beginning, and then he wasn't even told then that Ronan Keating would be replacing him. And he says that the only reason that he stayed in Boyzone was because it was financially it was going to be good for his family,
yeah.
You know, and that being kept to the background and not having any comment, he says that he didn't speak to Louis Walsh for 7 years. Being in the background all the time impacted his confidence so much. So his story is tinged with sadness, as of course Stephen Gately's one is.
Does it hint at any chance to make more music? Like, does it leave the door open at all?
Yeah, it does and it doesn't. I mean, they talk again very honestly. I mean, it is a very raw, emotional, honest documentary, quite unlike any other I've seen. And it is... It's brilliant to hear the guys. I mean, this act almost acts as a sort of therapy session for them. And it is brilliant to hear the guys, you know, address these kinds of stories that we might not have known before. But they spent so much time talking about how after Stephen's death, you know, that just devastated them. Stephen, of course, died at the age of 33 from an undiagnosed heart condition. And the scenes where they speak about, you know, their brotherhood and, you know, everything that happened around the funeral when they spent that night with him in the church, that's profoundly moving. But they also talk about how the 10 years that followed when they were a four-piece, it just wasn't the same. So when they walked away in 2019 after a farewell tour, they were walking away, you know, after arguments and realizing that just as a four-piece, it didn't really work. But once they're asked by a producer, would you do it again? They don't say no.
Okay.
And there's this, and you can tell that the prospect of going out into arenas, I don't think it will be about the money for them. They want that feeling of performing for thousands of people again. And for some of them, you can tell that it excites them. Maybe one or two, you can tell that it stresses them out.
Like, as a huge Boyzone fan, I know a lot of people listening here as well, like I assume we're going to learn loads from the series. I've learned loads already from what you're telling me and I haven't even watched the three episodes yet.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, you'll learn loads about how the, you know, boy band publicity machine worked in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Louis Walsh recalls the oddest stories about how he says that he would literally make up stories about Boyzone just to keep them in the papers, like you know, them being involved in, you know, vehicle crashes or them dating people that they weren't dating at all. These were all made up. So it is fascinating to how, you know, those pop stars stayed in the press.
Yeah.
It is fascinating to learn, you know, all of the stories about how Ronan's solo career came to light, about how, you know, I always thought that Boyzone broke up, and it wasn't. It was a case of them performing this record-breaking Nine Nights in the Point Theatre. Ronan Keating saying to everyone, look, I'm just going away for a year to do this thing and not coming back for 7 years. So it is quite educational. If you are a huge Boyzone fan, you still will learn a lot. But I will say, you think pop documentary, you think this is going to be bright, this is going to be vibrant, you know, you're going to have a good laugh with it. I found it extraordinarily sad. Compelling viewing. I mean, I'm glad that they made it, and I'm sure that they are glad too, but it is quite devastating at times.
I was going to ask you how you feel after watching all three episodes, but I think that kind of sums it up there, like very compelling watching. And you're right too, like you hear a pop documentary, I thought the same thing, light and fluffy is, you know, tinge of sadness, but it seems like they go very deep with this.
Oh, they do, yeah. It's the first, it's actually the first series in a long time, first documentary series in a long time that I've watched from beginning to end. I mean, once one episode finished, I just thought, no, I need to. And that's the mark of a good documentary, when you know how the story ends, but you still want to, you still want to watch it. And I think it does what every good music documentary does, which is it tells you a story about a band that, for me, I might not have paid any interest in before, but you come out of it fascinated by that band. And that's the mark of a good music documentary.
Chris, I'm hoping that all three episodes are dropping at once, so because I can binge them back to back.
I think they might be dropping it once on Sky and Now, but if you want to watch it traditional television viewing, the first episode is 9 o'clock, I believe, on Sky Documentaries on Sunday.
So Sunday night, Sky Documentaries, 9 p.m. is when we can have this, so not that far away at all.
No, all three episodes will then be available after that.
Okay, fantastic. I'm really and truly looking forward to watching this. Chris, thank you so much for coming on and chatting to us about this morning.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So chat to you later. That was Chris Walzer, art journalist and film critic. Jig. Also, on 2FM Drive, a little bit later on, after 3 o'clock, you can catch our very own Emma Power, who is going to be chatting to the boys' own main man himself, Ronan Keating. It's RTE 2FM.